episode of the podcast, I talk with actor Sky Elibar. He's most famously known from his role as Big Braden from the killer film The Greasy Strangler. He's played in other things like Under the Silver Lake, The Rocker, you name it, he's been in it. He's an awesome dude, super funny, also a talented musician as well. So we talk about that and a whole bunch of other crazy stories and stuff. So hope you enjoy this episode. And don't forget to share when you can and help support what I'm doing here. So it's much appreciated. So enjoy it, and thanks for listening. All right, Sky. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Hey, thank you, man. Really appreciate it. I love to do these things.
Yeah, I've been wanting to get you on since you're on my friend's podcast, Hollywood is Dead, their podcast.
Oh, yeah, they're great. I love those guys.
Yeah, it's cool because we kind of came up together with the whole podcast and stuff. Like, we both started around the same time, so we've kind of helped each other out, you know, with, like, different things. So it's been pretty cool.
As you should, right?
Yeah, it's all about community, man, and help build people up instead of breaking people down, you know?
Unfortunately, actors, I'm the only actor out here that helps other actors.
Oh, man.
It's harsh, man. It's really harsh.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Like, I come from a music background and stuff, and it's the same with, like, bands. Like, you would think bands would be helping bands out, but in a lot of cases, bands aren't helping bands out, you know? Yeah. They're, like, kind of putting them down or some shit, and it's horrible.
It's ego. It's ego and jealousy and envy and all that stuff, man. You know?
Yeah, it's fucking crazy, man. I don't like that. I like positive things. I like, you know, helping people out, and I like promoting. I like getting stuff out there. That's why I started this podcast, man, is to get some more, like, you know, names and voices out there, help, you know, people get heard that may not been heard before, and, you know, just help spread the word on all the things I love. So
that's me. I haven't been heard of before. Thanks for the help, man.
I had a talk with your Greasy co-star earlier this year, Mr. Michael Rapaport.
Oh, yeah, man. He's definitely a trip. Always a trip, in a good way.
Yes, very much so. He lived up to everything I thought he would when we were talking, so it blew me away. And we've become friends after that. He wants to lay down some vocals on, like, some electronic shit that I'm fucking around with. So that should be interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it. Love it.
So you know,
his brother used to own a big club. He might still own it. A real famous club in San Diego called the Casbah, mm-hmm. where everybody from Nirvana to God, everyone's played there coming up.
Yeah. So, he was mentioning that on the podcast with me, like all these crazy, like, band stories he had. I was like, holy shit, dude.
he's in the music thing. He's been at it. So yeah, it's fun, man. A lot of fun.
I see that. You did band stuff too before you became actor, correct? You're into music?
Yes. Yeah. In music pretty exclusively until 2006 when I jumped ship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, got into, you know, TV, film, and commercials. And the rest is history, I guess.
What kind of music did you play?
It started out being kind of like prog, techno prog rock.
Mm-hmm.
And then got into funky, heavy, grunge type rock. Then we got signed to Atlantic and they changed our whole sound right at the mixing board. Right at the mixing board and brought loops in and like, what the fuck is that loop? What is that? Who did that? Oh, I did it. The guy's writing our music for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, you know, it is what it is. It was what it was and it's all good. Everything's good.
What was the name of your band?
Seventh House.
Seventh House. It sounds familiar. I mean, it sounds real familiar. How long were you all together for?
God, we started out in 1991, got signed in 2000, and was on Atlantic for a year and a half and got dumped, and then got approached by other labels, and it didn't work out. And then the towers came down. As you said, then we left. Well, I left her for LA, from New York.
Right. So any like notable shows that y'all had, like with certain bands? Like, what are some of your big like high points from your music stuff?
Our biggest high point was started in 1996 when we opened for Bob Seger at the Pittsburgh Civic Arena.
Oh, nice.
Which was amazing. And then we opened a lot of other shows. Dave Matthews, Fishbone, Stone Temple Pilots, Morphine, on and on and on. Green Day, Deftones. So, you know, we were out there and we were doing a lot of stuff, man. You know?
That's killer, especially getting fun. To play with Morphine.
Morphine, man. Wow, what a genius. Sandman. What a tragedy.
I know. I was about to say that when he died, that was so horrible because I'm a big Morphine fan, and so was my wife. And stuff they did was like just out of this world, you know?
You know what's funny? I don't know the guy's last name. I can't remember it. I worked on a set with a guy who was the original Morphine drummer. He was out here from LA and he was working at Pasadena Art School and doing acting.
Mm-hmm.
And we got talking. He says, like, I'm the original drummer in Morphine. And I'm like, wait, no, you're not. He said, no, it was before the guy. Who's the guy?
I can't remember.
Sandman. It's Dana Cawley. I know Dana Cawley.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember the drummer's name. But anyway, he helped Sandman he came out of Treat Her Right to the blues band Sandman was in, that kind of weird blues thing.
Yeah.
He came out of that into starting the group with Sandman, and then stuff happened. But it's funny, man, who you meet.
Yeah, this world's a lot smaller than you think, you know, like when people say that shit's for real. Like you meet someone over here that's part of this, is part of that, and it's part of a bigger thing, you know?
Yeah, man.
That's pretty wild though, you get to have the chance to play with them. Did you get to talk with Sandman or any of the guys in the band when you played?
I talked to Dana, mm-hmm. and I went to school in Boston and hung out in Boston for a long time, and friends of mine in Boston, musician friends, knew him as well. So we had a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Boston's a real, real tight knit. If you're there and you know people are really down to earth. Mm-hmm. Like you could have talked to Jay Giles. You could have talked to Steven Tyler. You could talk to Sandman. I mean, they weren't like big. I know Steven Tyler and all those guys act like big stars, but they're really down to earth, those dudes.
Right.
All those guys in Boston. It's a really cool musical community.
Yeah, we toured through Boston before. We played Philadelphia, and I think after Philadelphia went to Boston. That was a totally different experience there. Like Philadelphia was pretty rough. Philly? And Philly, we played at Kung Fu Necktie.
Kung Fu Necktie.
Yeah.
Don't know it. It must be after we kind of like left the East Coast. We played at J.C. Dobbs, the North Star, Khyber Pass, that kind of, are any of those places still around?
Yeah, Kung Fu Necktie was like a big like place for stoner doom bands, and we're like a doom band, like a kind of black metal doom band, sludge band. We had all kinds of different names people would call us. So
wow, great.
And that was a big place for that. So we're like, oh, cool, we're gonna play Kung Fu Necktie. Everybody plays there. So once we got there, we had to like drag our gear across like two blocks of like dirty diapers and syringes and shit. Like it was a bad neighborhood. Oh, it was really dirty, right?
Did, and I played with a full stack.
What's that?
Did you guys play CBGBs?
No, we never played there.
Was it after it closed?
What's that?
It was like you guys were after it closed, or were you?
Oh yeah. I believe we were after it closed, or it was just closing when we started. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So you guys are pretty, pretty new, and we started a long time ago, man.
Yeah, our band started like 2006, 2005-ish. Okay. Yeah.
Right on, dude. What's the name of your band?
Tripping the Mechanism.
Hmm. Like yeah. Tripping the Mechanism?
Yep, yep.
Okay, gotcha.
And we got like a band camp and all that stuff, YouTube stuff, you know.
See, you know, one of my good friends who loves the Greasy Strangler that we met in South Carolina like 4 years ago and we've become great friends is Phil Anselmo.
And oh, nice. From Down and stuff, yep.
Yeah, and Pantera and Super Joint Ritual. And we just did a convention in Indianapolis with him and hung out, and it was talking the music stuff with him, man, like the history, talking about Dimebag and how they met and the studio where Phil, when he was in high school, used to go over there and like, it's a trip.
Yeah, his knowledge on music is probably like this out of this world, you know, all the experience that he's had.
Yeah, it's insane. And that track he did with Tony Iommi, have you ever heard that?
I probably have, but it's not fresh in my head.
It blew my mind. It like, you know, Phil like screams.
Mm-hmm.
This, he's actually singing.
Yeah, he's got a great voice on both ends. He's got a
fucking amazing voice. And I said, Phil, you should do a whole fucking record like that, man. Blow people's minds. It's like, I'd love to do some more stuff with Iommi. Oh, my God. It's like, Tony Iommi's like an idol of mine. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, Black Sabbath, come on.
Right.
Come on, man. Anyway,
you were a guitar player?
No. I started out playing guitar, but then because of the lack of bass players, I flipped to bass and just kept playing bass. We couldn't find a fucking bass player. But there were all these guitar players around Pittsburgh that were like, great, even better, way better than me, right?
Right.
So I said, fuck it, I'll play bass. Let's get this guy. it's just, you know, that type of thing.
You got to do what you got to do when it comes to that, that's for sure. Like, the problem like we had here was, like, good drummers and stuff like that and bass players. Like, you had plenty of guitar players. They're fucking everywhere. Well, you know, like drummers and bass players are kind of hard to come by. Drummers and bass
players. Because they're out making money.
Right.
Guitar players are a dime a dozen. They're not making any money.
I mean, yeah, because everybody plays guitar, especially nowadays, man. Like everybody, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Shit, when I've been playing guitar since I was like 16 or so. And there's dudes now that start off playing that can fucking shred circles around me.
Yeah.
So how did you transfer from doing music into film? Like, how did all that get started?
My wife got me into it. She got me into a casting company, grabbed me and took me down to this casting company, and I signed up and got my first acting job in a movie, and joined SAG in like 2 months. But before I did it, I said, I'm not going to get all wrapped up in this unless I can get in SAG quickly, and if I don't get in SAG in a year, I'm not doing non-union shit. It's just brutal. It's like an opportunity for people to just take complete advantage of you. So sure enough, I got in SAG in 2 months, and I was like, wow, this is great, man, let's do it. Nice. Just did everything, man. Everything.
And how long ago was that?
2006, I joined SAG. My first job was July 21st, or July 20th or 21st, 2006. Okay. And then I joined SAG right in the fall.
It says on your Internet Movie Database page, you did stunts too. Like, did you start off doing like stunt work and stuff like that, or is that?
I actually didn't do stunts on that movie. My friend, who's a drummer, coached Rainn Wilson, showed him how to play the drums. He spent 3 months on the set with Rainn Wilson, and he put my name in the credits because he thought I looked like Rainn Wilson.
Oh shit.
So it was a weird thing, and I can't get it off. I don't know how to get it off, but I have done stunts in commercials and in films, but not that stunt. None that were ever like logged in.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, internet movie database can be pretty weird with stuff like that. Like, they're wrong.
Yeah, you can't get a hold of these guys. They're like the guy behind the fucking curtain. You know?
Yeah, they're like the wizard. You know, you can't get a hold of the wizard.
You can't get a hold of the wizard, man.
What was the first like film you got to be in? Like, what was your first big
film? It was called Nothing But the Truth. And it was a half skateboard documentary and half movie acting with these famous skateboarders.
Nice.
And I got to meet all these like famous skateboarders. You name it. Reese Forbes. You know, Omar Salazar. P-Rod. All of them were on. It was a Nike thing. And was a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, so good first experience then.
It was a hard work, but it was a lot of fun. And at the end of it, they like had a tent full of Nike shoes, and they said, take as many as you want.
Oh, shit.
And I just picked out my size. I took like freaking 20, 30 pairs of shoes. I don't know how many. But I kept one and never wore it because it's it's a real special pair of Nikes. And my friend, Kevin and Justin Yeezy in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, have a tennis shoe store, not a tennis shoe store, but a shoe store for sports shoes. And they collect sports shoes. And he saw mine. He says, they're worth at least $1,000.
Wow.
They're in mint condition, in the box, never worn, blah, 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 blah.
That's crazy.
So it was great. Nike's cool, man.
Yeah, most definitely. So
That's it. That's like how I got into it.
Wow. Do you have anybody like you look up to, like actor-wise, like kind of inspire you?
I like Michael Keaton. I like Christian Bale. I like Daniel Day-Lewis. Michael Seymour Hoffman. Let me see. God, I like so many different actors, man. All the old guys, you know, De Niro and Al Pacino. And I love Gene Hackman. These guys, man, just fucking amazing dudes that just like get in it and are so in it.
Yeah, that's a solid list there. I mean, they're all great actors and stuff. If you can pull some inspiration from those guys, you're doing good, you know.
And I like Bradley Cooper, dude.
Yeah, he's good at
his range. For his range, he does comedy. I saw his TV show comedy. I laughed my ass off, and then he does serious shit. So
did you see him in Midnight Meat Train?
No.
Oh, that's a good watch one. It's a horror film. It's based off of Clive Barker's short story, and it's a serious role he's playing in it, and it gets pretty dark, man. He does a great job in that one.
He's dark.
Yeah.
He's dark, dude.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one to check out if you haven't seen. I think it's streaming on like Hulu or maybe one of those streaming like Amazon or something. But yeah, it's really good.
Check it out. Love it. And I like Sam Rockwell.
Oh yeah, he's great too. He can play like any role, man. I've seen him all kinds of different roles. I think it's good to have the versatility like these guys that you're mentioning. They're all very versatile and can play light roles, dark roles.
He's a serious dude. And there's so many, dude. There's so many, you know.
How did all the whole Greasy shit come about with the Greasy Strangler? How'd you get cast in there? And like, Yeah, tell me the story on that because it's one of my favorite movies.
I got a call from this lady who's a casting director who'd been calling me in for commercials and everything, and she knew Jim, and she was working with Jim to try to get his film career together because he was doing a lot of commercials. And she called me in for a bunch of his short film projects, and I met him, and I really, really liked his stuff. I just immediately, it immediately resonated in me in the weirdest way. And he called me up one day and said, "I want you to do this short film," and I thought it was the one that I had just auditioned for. This. Weird thing. And he said, no, it's not that one. It's a thing called Renegades. Mm-hmm. And we shot this thing in like 3 days, went to Sundance, got some pretty good reviews, and people were dumbfounded by it too. And then I did another short called Crabs, which was pretty much the same universe. Mm-hmm. And that went to film festivals, and people were like, "What the fuck is this?" And so we had planned on, he had called me and said, "We're going to do the feature film Crabs." He sent me the script, and I loved it. And we're going to shoot it in Austin, and the money fell through. He said, "Don't worry, Sky, we're going to do another one." And then I got like 6 months or 7 months later, I got the Greasy Strangler in my inbox. And I was like, my mouth dropped for about 3 days after I read that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things. So, damn. And then he pulled me into an evening with Beverly Loughlin, Tropical Cocktails, and so forth and so on, man.
Nice.
But it was just that meeting in a casting room where we kind of hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
It was luck. And he's a real, real down-to-earth dude. Most of these directors that you know, you meet here, they don't talk to you.
Oh, man.
It's pretty cold. It's just the lay of the land, you know. And but Jim was super, super cool and kind of included me in stuff. And I thought, wow, this is cool, man. He's a super cool dude. He's a guy you want to work with for a while.
That's cool. I'm glad to know he's a awesome dude outside of, you know, the movie stuff. And I love the way his films look and stuff too. It's like a fresh breath of air, you know. It's like there's something different about it. And they're like, I don't know, just grab you, you know.
Yeah, I do. I love the way his stuff looks. He's really involved in that big time. You know, hanging with the right DPs, the photographers, the guy who runs the camera or does the lighting and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So important, man, that in the editing room.
Yeah, most definitely.
You could take back bad acting and go into to an editing room, you know, but if you have shitty sound, shitty lighting, shitty, you know, cinematography, you got a shitty movie, no matter how good the acting is.
Exactly. It was also cool how Spectre Vision picked up the Greasy Strangler and like really, you know, set it on its way.
Yeah, that's super cool, huh? People got behind it with Jim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he hit the nail right on the head. Something that has never really been done before, I think. You can't compare it to anything. You can try to make comparisons. But it doesn't, you know, it's one of those films that's really, really, really unique.
Most definitely, yeah. I convert people to that film all the time, but when they ask me to describe it to them, I'm like, well, it's kind of this and that, but yeah, you just need to watch it and prepare yourself. Yeah.
It's like music, too. When you hear a band like Morphine, what's Morphine like? You know, well, you know, how do you describe Morphine? Like, it's like if you took, you know, took heroin and you mixed it with, you know what I'm saying? It's like really hard to describe the music.
It's kind of like a fever dream almost, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. How'd you get into the role of, you know, a Big Braden? How in the hell did you like get in that mindset to play that role? Because that role's wild, man.
Reading the script over and over again, and reading these lines and getting it in my head, like, you know, internalizing it and getting it into this character, imagining this character. And then when we went to costumes, you could see prior to me going into costume.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got in costume, it just came together. I'd been working on it and it just came together.
Nice. So you just became that character. Like, did you ever break character during like filming and stuff? Were you that type of actor?
No. Laughing, no goofing around. It was like, this is a world all in its own, and these characters are very, very entrenched in this world.
Mm-hmm. How'd you deal with all the grease in that? And there's so much grease in the actual movie itself.
It was like going to the doctor, man. You don't want to do it, but you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go to the dentist, but you do it. It's just like that, dude. It was just abysmal, but you did it because you knew it was going to be good for you. Jumping into the vat of grease, dipping my toes and dipping myself down into that greasy shit.
What did they use for the grease? Was it actually grease?
It was this stuff called, well, you mean the stuff that was on the floor that Detective Jody picked up?
Yeah, yeah.
That was tapioca.
Oh.
But the stuff they put on our bodies was stuff called, you can look it up, it's called methocellulose. Mm-hmm. It's what the industry uses. And it's like a greasy type stuff, but it doesn't have a sheen on camera. So they had to add this stuff called liquid ice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 40 degrees out and they put liquid ice on us and we're running around the streets. And it was fucking freezing. And then they'd say, Sky, come on over in front of the heater. I get in front of the heater. I'm like, oh, this feels so good. Turn around back. Feels so good. Now I'm warm again. Okay, let's get some more liquid ice on you. That dried up. Shit dried up in the heater, but you had to stand in front of the heater. You had to. Freezing in that fucking suit.
Oh, man.
And sweating under there too, you know?
Mm-hmm. So nice combination of cold and then cold sweat plus grease, well, fake grease, but still like, oh, man.
Oh, and you're wrapped for the day, Sky. And then you go into, and they're trying to pull this fucking suit off you for an hour.
Wow.
Because the dudes made it too tight. They measured me and they made it too tight.
How long did it take for them to get all that stuff on you?
On was pretty easy because they powdered your skin and it slipped right on. Mm-hmm. But getting it off was like fucking horrible, man.
Oh,
it was horrible. And then the shit was on your hair. And I go home at night, like midnight, a couple times at midnight. I spent 2 hours in the fucking hot shower trying to get that shit out of my hair.
Damn.
It would not come out, dude. I had to like get a shampoo and just work it out. I shampooed my hair like 5 or 6 times, dude.
Oh, man. I can feel that because I have super long hair, like it's down past my ass. And when I get shit in my hair like that, I can just imagine it.
Holy shit.
It's the worst.
So you're a headbanger?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a metalhead.
Cool, dude.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, my hair is past my ass now. So is my wife. So we got like the longest hair in any kind of like metal scene down here. Like we're at a show or something, man. You can spot us a mile away because our fucking hair is super long. You know, we're over our head banging.
Do you know the band Child Bite from Detroit?
We actually played with them down in Florida. I never got to meet them. We played with them in Florida at what was it, Wormfest down there. It was like a big metal festival they had.
Yeah, and I
we
know
got
those to play guys. With They're them. Greasy fans.
Are they? That's cool. It seems to be a connection between the metal world and fucking the Greasy Strangler, man.
Well, here's the thing. I got this band called the Alpine Village People, mm-hmm. and we do polka versions of the Village People.
Oh, nice.
And we dress in lederhosen, and Phil wanted to produce us metal versions of polka. I know there's a polka metal band in San Francisco, but not like us.
Mm-hmm.
Not like us. So we almost did that. I almost went over and, you know, recorded at Phil's place.
Nice. So you'd have been on Housecore Records then, his record label.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could, I guess.
Yeah. Just, that would be killing.
That's a trip, huh?
That is a trip. I've never heard any polka metal before. And like you said, there probably is a polka metal band somewhere overseas or whatever, but that'd be like a cool little niche or whatever you could work your way into here, you know?
We had fun, man. We played some shows and, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you said you're still doing that now?
Well, it's been on hold. It's kind of, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably so busy with acting stuff, it's hard to get, like, in between there for band stuff.
It takes so much energy, you know, dude.
Yeah.
You're totally... I mean, you know the shit inside and out, that how much it takes out of your life. Everything.
Everything, yes. Like, 90% of your life is dedicated to music. If you're in a band and you're tour and all that stuff, you play out, like, that's all you do. Like, that's it. You do. If you're not playing, you're promoting. If you're not promoting, you're driving. If you're not doing that, you're making shirts. We used to do our shirts like DIY style. We had like a little printer, like one of those fucking screen printers in a garage. So we'd fucking do our own shirts in there. Sometimes we would send it out to get them done, but most of the time we do them ourselves.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you ever use Shopify or Printify, these print on demand things, and throw your logo on the shirt and just put it out there without printing all that shit?
No, we never did that. I don't know why we didn't. I think it was cheaper, like the way we went to do it ourselves, a lot cheaper because we just had like a basic screen printer. Like it was nothing fancy. It was like a $30 screen printer you get from an art store. Like it was super DIY. But yeah, it was just cheaper to go that route. And we did send shirts off to get done. Like we had like a certain, I can't remember how we used to send our shirts to get them printed off on, but we knew the people there, so we knew the quality would be really good. So our last run of shirts.
It's easier for you to carry them around.
Right. David Paul Seymour did our last designs. Have you heard of him before?
Who?
David Paul Seymour. He's a really badass like artist.
No, I haven't heard of him.
Yeah, he does really killer like work. Mostly doom. He does a bunch of like he does some death metal stuff, but he's just an all around really killer artist. And he did our last shirt design. What's that?
You pay him?
Yeah, we paid him. Yep, we paid him for those certain designs. All the designs we have, we paid for. I think we came up with like a couple designs on our own, and that's the ones we did like the DIY style because they're easy to do. You know, nothing fancy.
So that's what I need for my store on Shopify. I've got a store called Fully Dunked,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I need some, you know, less of the generic, just typeset and a design.
Hmm.
So maybe we could talk about that. You can hook me up with this guy.
Yeah, definitely. I can send you his link and all that stuff. I got a few artist friends that you might be into that do really, really good work, and they will work with you like for band stuff or whatever thing you got going on, movie stuff. I know you do the beanies and all, right? The Greasy Strangler beanies.
Yeah. That's not really, I didn't really do that. Tim League of Alamo sent that my way and I just, he got that going for the movie in 2016, and they were like promo things,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, I've seen those around. Those are cool. What kind of stuff's on your store? Like, what do you have now?
Just t-shirts with generic like printing on them. Like, I know disco, trust me. But I it'd be great to like design something like bullshit artist in a design.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Like, nobody can really find anywhere else, that kind of thing. So I'll talk to you about that.
Yeah, most definitely do. And I know some people, so I can definitely hook you up with that. Help you out anyway. Send you in the right direction, at least.
Amen. Well,
yeah. So what were some of the most like crazy shit that went down on the set of the Greasy Strangler? You got any like crazy stories besides running around in the street in 40 degree weather?
I was just talking to the guy who's caulking my baseboard. Greasy stories. You know who Carmen Appice is, right?
Yes.
Like one of the most famous drummers ever. Played with Vanilla Fudge, Jeff Beck, on and on and on. And he came on set because his daughter was like the special effects makeup lady. So I got to meet him, and he choked me out in a greasy suit on. And when we were up in the forest, my greasy suit split out in the back, and they only had one of them.
Oh no!
And they were freaking out, dude. I said, dude, why didn't you make a quality suit? You know, and they're like, these things are expensive, Sky. And they had to like pin it up, and they couldn't show me from the back. You know, it was one of those things that was crazy. And running around the streets with the liquid ice on was just nuts. But the craziest thing is with the final scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be that didn't happen because Michael was ready to have a heart attack. He said, if I do this one more time, I'm going to die. And they said, okay, we're not doing this scene. The final scene was going to be us fully naked walking down the street in the industrial section downtown, downtown, running for like 10 minutes. Dude, it would have been just insane. It just would have been insane. But he couldn't do it anymore, man.
Yeah, that should have wore you out, man. All the running and everything else you're doing in that film. I can believe it.
Wow. So, yeah. And what was I saying?
I was about running around and the Greasy Strangler, how Michael's about to have a heart attack and stuff.
Yeah, that last scene would have just been the greatest scene ever. Ever. If we could have pulled that off. He did it once, and he missed his line. He missed the line that they wanted to run. We needed to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Let do this line again." And Michael's like, I can't do it.
Dang. He still did one hell of a job, though.
He did. Diabetes and all.
Right? Oh, wow. I didn't know I had diabetes.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't say that, dude. Is that that against the law?
Oh, no.
I could lose my license here. I don't think you can tell people's health. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think.
Yeah, maybe cut that. But he had to do his medicine every day, you know, that kind of thing. And it was, I don't know how he got through it, dude. He's amazing.
He is. And then he had to wear that giant prosthetic. I'm like, holy shit, man.
Yeah, and I had to wear that little big fucking, and he's got his and I don't have mine.
Oh, he got to keep it. Yeah, that's right. They get to keep it, Jim. I've seen some pictures with him and like some conventions and stuff with it on. I'm like, oh shit.
What a dude.
Have y'all stayed like friends and stuff after the film? Like,
oh yeah, we do shit all the time. We're gonna do Vegas in a week.
Oh nice.
Yeah.
What convention is that?
It's the Days of the Dead in Vegas. It's going to be big. It's going to be really big. Bruce Campbell's there all the way down. Like,
nice. Have you got to talk to Bruce before?
No, I've never met him. I never did a convention with him. I'm really psyched to talk with him.
Yeah, he's like the king, literally.
He's the king. And that's, I hear he's a super, super cool dude.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I've heard the same thing about him. You know, it's always a bummer when you hear about somebody you look up to and they turn out to be not so nice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually haven't had that experience with anyone, but that I can think of, other than Roger Clemens.
Roger Clemens.
He was a fucking asshole. I asked him for his autograph like four times, 4 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fuck off.
He just ignored you or what?
No, he's like, fuck off.
No shit. Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck that
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, Boston. Yeah. I mean, and his handler, he was in the bullpen warming up, and we were right up at the fence watching him. And the handler came up and said, don't watch him.
What?
Stand back. I'm like, what the fuck?
Like, who the hell is this guy, you know?
Yeah, who the hell does he think he is? Rocket Man?
Yeah. He's a king of England or some shit, I guess. I don't know.
yeah, exactly. Don't look at me.
Wow. I've heard Maynard's kind of like that from Tool. Like, I've heard some people say some horror stories about Maynard, but then I would hear people say some nice things about Maynard. But he doesn't, you know, he just don't like to be, like, up in front with the fans and stuff like that, because people go crazy over Maynard from Tool, man. Like, he's got all these, like, cult followings and shit. It gets kind of scary when people are into him so heavy, you know?
You like Tool?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, been a fan of them since I was in high school.
Yeah. How about Nine Inch Nails?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Yes.
Yeah. I met Trent Reznor. Oh, he's from Mercer. He's from Mercer, man, right? 20 minutes from where I grew up.
No shit. Do you ever get to meet him?
Yeah, in a Whole Foods down here in Sherman Oaks.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. How I meet that? Everybody at the Whole. Oh, he's cool. He's cool. Yeah. I met everybody, dude. Everybody's at this Whole Foods. Anthony Kiedis. Oh, my God. Everybody.
Yeah, name some more. Who else you meet down there? This is interesting.
Newman from Seinfeld.
Oh, Newman.
Newman from Seinfeld was in the pasta department where the sauces are. And I said, I came up to him and I said, hey, Newman, look, Newman.
What did he do?
You know, like, he just walked away from me.
Oh, shit.
Hey, Newman, look, Newman.
That would have been a good one to get on tape. That would have been funny,
dude,
as hell.
I thought that was pretty funny, but, you know.
You know what? There was a rumor going around forever about Newman that he got hit by a Mack truck and died. This was years ago. So these years went by. I thought he was dead the whole time. Then he appears on like this show called The Blacklist. I'm like, hey, it's fucking Newman. Yeah, so I looked him up. I was like, he's alive. There was some giant rumor that got started. I'm like, that's crazy.
Do you think he lost weight just for health reasons?
I would hope so. I think he did. Like, he was big in Jurassic Park, you know.
God, in Seinfeld, he was the funniest dude.
Yeah, he was. Him and Kramer together, dude. Holy
God,
shit.
Him and Kramer are just fucking legendary.
Still my favorite sitcom ever. Like, my favorite sitcom is Seinfeld. You can't fuck with that.
Yeah, you can't fuck with Seinfeld, man.
And it's about to come on Netflix, too, now. So, like, people who haven't seen it, like, a new generation to get to witness Seinfeld, man.
For how much are these guys worth now? Billions,
yeah. Easy. Yeah, that shit. Did you ever get to see Jerry in Whole Foods?
No, I saw I met the dude from American Idol, the black guy.
Jackson, I think, I know his last name, I think. I don't know. I've only
Randy
watched American
Jackson.
Highlight.
Randy Jackson. And on and on. I got to think. It's just everybody goes there.
I don't know if the paparazzi knows about that, man. You think they'd be like swarming around that place?
But I do. I got a little I got a little wine locker in this place in Santa Monica where I collect wine.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys there is a big, big wine collector, big guy. And he's the king of paparazzi. He's the guy that made all the paparazzi shit in L.A. famous. His name's Phil Ramey. Mm-hmm. And look him up, man. Look him up.
Pretty crazy shit.
He's the guy that took, we'd get in scuba gear and go out and take pictures of Elizabeth Taylor on a boat, or this guy, Brad Pitt. He'd do stuff like get in a helicopter and go over their house. And he did everything. I think he got the most ever for any picture he took of somebody. he's considered the king of paparazzi, and they're going to do a film about his life.
Wow.
But he told me a story. He said he came out to LA and he was friends with, check this out, Steve McQueen. He lived in Steve McQueen's guest house. And was best friends with Steve McQueen, and was, I guess Steve McQueen had cancer,
mm-hmm.
Throat cancer or something, and was dying. And they came to him, like the press or whoever came to him and said, if you get a picture of him, you know, with this cancer where he's like in a bad way, we'll give you like $5 million or something.
Wow.
And he said, that's where I draw the line.
Right.
He's like, no way am I doing that to a friend.
Well, that's good. At least he turned that shit down, man. I'd have been fucked up.
God. Leave that dude.
Crazy. The world of being a paparazzo.
But you got to look up Phil Ramey, Ramey. It's great. It's great. They'll tell you the stories about how he started the whole freaking thing. He's the man.
So he's
a great dude too.
Oh, you said he's nice and stuff. So that's cool.
He's a super cool dude. Yeah.
I bet he's got some fucking stories.
Oh my God. Yeah. We usually talk about wine when we get together there at the locker. He's mm-hmm. there taking care of his locker all the time. You should see the stuff he has. Oh my God. My God.
Millions of dollars worth of wine.
Holy shit. At least.
Damn.
But he's a real guy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So what's up next, dude?
That's pretty crazy. Well, what kind of future plans you got? What kind of projects you got going on and stuff?
I got a Ben Evans film. This Josh Malerman, the Bird Box guys, his story is being adapted into a feature film. And we're getting ready to shoot this beginning of the next year. And I'm like the lead dude in it, Ben Evans.
Nice.
And then I have a film that I did with a writer director, Alan Cordell. He adapted this story from a guy named Noah Van Sciver, mm-hmm. graphic novelist. It's called The Lizard Laughed. We shot the short. Hopefully it gets in Sundance, and we're going to do a feature film on that. And I'm the main dude.
Nice.
And a vampire movie I'm going to do.
Oh, that's cool.
With a young, super young director called Local Haunts. And we're mm-hmm. getting that together. So a lot of different movies.
Movies. Hey, you sound busy, man.
Yeah, getting this stuff together and getting ready to work my butt off, man.
Sounds like it. And plus the conventions, right? How many conventions are you doing this year?
We got two or three more.
Mm-hmm.
And then next year, we have a convention agent named Samantha Osborne. She reps Corey from Slipknot.
Nice.
And a bunch of other really big people. He goes out, man, he makes insane freaking money when he goes out to these things.
Mm.
He was right beside us last time. So she's booking us. Hopefully we're going to Manchester next year. We're coming over to Florida. That's done. The Spookala is done. And she's working on a bunch of things. So I'm going to do a lot of festivals, a lot of conventions next year. Get out and meet the people and hang out and joke around, dude.
Yeah, hopefully next year I'll be able to meet you at one of these conventions. Being that I'm not doing full-time band stuff anymore because I'm kind of...
Where are you?
I'm South Carolina.
Oh, okay. So we're coming... Eben McNair of Mad Monster is going to do a greasy hot sauce. He's going to launch the product.
Nice.
And he's going to launch it at Mad Monster in South Carolina in February, I think it is.
Okay. February next year. Okay.
So are you near Myrtle Beach?
I'm about 2 hours away from Myrtle Beach.
Okay. Well, Yeezy's got a store down there, Kevin Yeezy. Mm-hmm. You should get out. If you're in Myrtle Beach, he's got a shoe store. He's a cool dude. Big greasy fan, big everything, music, everything.
Nice. Yeah, I have to try to make the Mad Monster next year in February. Like I said, I got time to do things now that I'm not doing band shit, you know, like I'm not touring or whatever. So now I can actually go to a convention or, you know, a festival. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll keep you posted. You keep me posted. And we'll get you in.
Awesome. That sounds great. Hell yeah. I'd like to get greasy with y'all.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, dude. That'll be fun, man.
Hell yeah.
I like to put a face with a voice. Voice with a face.
Yeah. Yeah, that usually helps, I guess, to see a voice. I just don't like doing videos, man. Videos are weird. In person's fine, but videos are fucking weird.
It's just as good as a phone call, man. Then you can walk around and you don't have to worry about being on camera.
Exactly.
Right?
So convenient. So.
Anyway, that's pretty much it, man.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you being on my podcast, Sky, man. It's been a great talk. It's been nice and greasy, just the way it should be, you know?
Yep. Fully lubricated, fully dunked.
Indeed, man. It's been great talking with you, and hopefully next year I get to see you and all that stuff, and get to hang out and stuff.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
So that cool, would be cool. Yes, man. Right on, I'll stay in touch with you, and I'm gonna send you some links on some artists and stuff, and just I'll keep in touch and everything like that.
Okay, cool, dude. Cool. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Brandon.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
I will do. Peace, later, man. Bye.